Welcome everybody to this Easter Monday Derrick Arden's web chat show. Thank you so much for joining us. Today we've got Alvin Law all the way from Calgary, Canada, going to talk to us about his experiences in life. But before that, I just want to give you a couple of negotiation ideas. When I first got into negotiation, I went on a number of courses, and one of the things that we learned was to never split the difference. On the Monday I got back from the course, we were charging a client a fee of £10,000 for doing some special work for them, and the client said, "Oh, Derrick, that's far too much. Couldn't possibly pay that. Could we split the difference?" Well, actually, I'd have been quite happy with £5,000 for this piece of work because it was in my discretion. But I said, "No, Chris, I really couldn't split the difference on that. I tell you what, I could go 70-30. And you know when you sometimes negotiate and you go gulp and you say something and you get outside the box and you wonder what the client's going to say? And he said, "That's fine, Derrick." And I've made an extra £2,000 by not splitting the difference. Split the difference by all means if it's not very important, if it's a small matter, if it's a relationship. But remember, if you put your fee on the table and you do have to negotiate your fee, and we know we try not to, but sometimes we put a higher fee out, not always expecting to get it. Remember, best position, target position, walk away position in your negotiating strategy, and also what's your alternative position. So be careful when you split the difference. Sometimes you don't have to split. That's my negotiation tip for today. Now, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome a friend of mine, a friend I met, first of all, in New Orleans at the Professional Speaking Convention, which took place there just before the floods in New Orleans. His name's Alvin Law, and I met him in a lift, and we were just talking about this story, and I put my hand out to shake hands with him, and I was so embarrassed when he offered me his toe to shake, because I had no idea that Alvin's mum had taken thalidomide, the drug, the wonder drug it was supposed to be in the 60s, which would avoid morning sickness. And Alvin was born with no arms, abandoned by his mum at 5 days. And it's an inspiration to any of us who are ever feeling down, worrying about things, worrying about life, because what Alvin has done has been absolutely sensational. And I'm going to read it out a little bit so I don't leave anything out. He's a very accomplished musician. He's an award-winning speaker. He's been inducted into the Canadian Speakers Hall of Fame. And recently, he's had the honour to be put into the Canadian Disability Hall of Fame, and with the ex-Canadian Prime Minister awarding him this fantastic honour. His book, which I've got up here, is absolutely brilliant. Alvin's Laws of Life, which I'm sure he will share with us. I was so moved when I read it. So what I'm going to do now is shut up and hand you over to my friend, Alvin Law. Alvin, thanks for joining us. What's the weather like in Calgary?
We finally have a nice sunny day above zero. We're having a very strange spring in more ways than just the virus, because we did have snow, approximately 6 inches on Saturday. There's still a good 2.5 feet in my yard, but you can't go anywhere anyway, so why not just stay inside and take part in a webinar just like this? I'm delighted to be here.
Thank you so much. So Kevin, tell us a little bit about you and your story.
Well, I think you covered all of the basics, Derrick. I think the most awkward part of me starting any conversation is I have to talk about my circumstance. It's not about ego. It's all about me. I learned that from a lot of people, including Patricia Fripp. And, you know, I just want to acknowledge people. In fact, what was really funny was a few years ago, my wife, Darlene and I are both second timers in the sense that we were both married before. I have a 34-year-old son from a previous marriage. But Darlene was very influential in my life, not only becoming my partner in life, but also running our business. And it is a business, isn't it, folks? Anyone that does that for a living. But the point is that Darlene really made me understand something that I knew about instinctively. And one day she said, "Do you ever wonder what it looks like?" And it was the strangest question, because I've been looking in a mirror for my entire life. And her point was, no, what it looks like to a total stranger, let's use a retail experience where I'm say, going into a restaurant or going into a petrol station or going into a, even a drive up where you get your food. And I, you know, and I use my foot just to give them money or my credit card. And before that, I would just give it to them. And if they asked the question, I would answer. But that's been 10 years or so now. Now I start the conversation by the way, I have no arms. I have to use my toes to give you this. I hope you're okay with that. And that changes the entire moment of the dialogue. So that's why even in my speech, a big focus of my talks and my book is just about what people are curious about. How did I do this? How did I learn to function using my feet? And of course, common sense and facts would tell you that I'm not one of the only people on the planet like this, although it is rare. But I still think that the bottom line of my life has not been, look what I can do with my feet. It's look what attitude can do for our lives. And that's not meant to be a segue cliche. I just really believe it. I think attitude is the most powerful idea that we've almost become a cliche about, because it can change our daily routine. It can change our interactions. It can change our relationships, as you well know. But more than anything, it's about giving of yourself from a positive energy point of view. It's why everyone who meets me gets a memory of it. So I want to throw this at your audience, whether you're a speaker or not, doesn't matter. What is the first impression people have of you when they meet you? What do they talk about when they leave the conversation? What do they talk about when they're talking to other people? You know, these relationships are sounding like a common sense idea, but I like to think of it this way. Act as if you're going to be remembered for the rest of their lives, and what impression are you going to make?
So tell me, you were brought up by a stepmother, Alvin. How did that work?
Actually, it was foster home, Derek, foster just home. To correct you. Yeah. Okay. What happened was when I was given up, and it's funny because people are often horrified. And I don't do it to be dramatic, but the fact is at 5 days of age, I was homeless. Not in the classic sense that we think of in the modern era. My family didn't live on the street. My family who gave birth to me simply couldn't cope. It was too much. But what I always remind people of is this was 1960. We did not have the knowledge of people with special needs like we do today. We didn't use words like inclusion or diversity like we do today. There was not the internet like there is today. So we can learn about these people and sometimes learn too much because there's so much information. But the fact is that 5 days of age, who was going to take home a baby without arms? Even people desperate for adoption. So I was put into the foster care system. And here's another example, Derek, for all your listeners. We tend to trash the foster care system all around the planet, especially here in North America. And maybe on occasion, rightfully so, some foster homes behave poorly. But that's a statistical thing. Just some people behave poorly. Some companies behave poorly. The majority of foster homes are excellent. And I was placed in a foster home with Hilda and Jack Law. They happened to be in their mid-50s. Mom was 53, 55. Dad was 53. And for those of you in the UK, you might love this. My father was born and raised in Northampton. So wow. I grew up with a British accent in our home. He came to Canada. This is how old he was and how old I am, Derek. He came to Canada by himself in 1923 to become rich and famous. And all he ever did was become a mechanic. But he was definitely famous. There was 900 people at his funeral, Derek. Because he was the epitome of people respecting someone for them respecting that person. My dad was a service manager in the farm implement dealership business. He took care of tractors and lorries and different things. But more than anything, mom and dad were these incredibly generous people who took in an armless baby temporarily, but I never left. So it was their wisdom and their culture in that home that changed the rules around how I've been able to function my entire life. And I really do give the credit to them, because had they not had a, if I can be cheesy for a second, a yes I can attitude in our home, I would be like a lot of people who believe the word can't is a bigger word than the word can. And I hate to talk in cliches, Derek, but this is how I grew up. There's no such word as can't was the mantra in our home. There's so many different issues that I learned, not just because it was gonna be someday a career. A lot of people say, well, of course you became a motivational speaker. No, that was not an of course. It was something that I chose to do because obviously, like so many people, you know, I've got a story to tell and I'm proud to tell it.
Didn't you tell me once when we met that up to the age of 30, you had a massive chip on your shoulder. And one day you woke up and you said, hey, hang on a minute, let's get rid of this chip because the only thing that is affecting is me. And maybe I can do something about that for other people. Or did I dream that?
No. I think the funniest thing about 30 is I think everybody's got an age of discovery. We always hear about, you know, the midlife crisis, or we all hear about turning 50 or whatever. We hear these age things. And I acknowledge that. What's ironic in my story, to revert back just for one second, is my parents were in their 60s when I was a teenager, or even wow, younger. I mean, they were 55 and 53 when I was a newborn. So do the math. And why that's important is because my parents, they had a lot of great strengths. But one of the weaknesses that they had, and I will acknowledge this, is they wanted me to be more confident than less confident. And that was fine as a teenager going into my 20s, but it kept piling up on me. I became a bit of a control freak because I knew that if I could control my environment, then I could have better control of the outcomes. I had a lot of confidence, which led to ego. In fact, what I believe, Derek, just to make a generalization, is I think ego is one of the most bruising human traits that a lot of people don't notice, because we say, well, that's okay, they're successful, let them be full of themselves. Well, you know, why 30 was because I had become divorced and I was then a single dad. That little boy was 3 years old when I left that marriage, and he came to live with me 3 months after I left because his mother had gone away. It's a long story, Derek, but I think what happened at 30 was I started looking at my life, realizing, you know what? My son is the most important thing in my life. But here's the thing, if I ever plan on getting married again, I better take a couple of steps off the podium or off the ladder and come down into the regular breathing space of everybody else. Otherwise, no one's going to want to be around me. Can you imagine how attractive is a guy without arms with a divorce and a kid and an ego the size of London, really? So I really did have to check myself. And I still have a good ego, Derek. But really, when I learned it's not about me, that was the biggest change in my character.
Wow. And so tell me, when did you learn to play the drums? Because there's not too many people playing the drums in your situation, are there, Alvin?
No, in fact, it's rather funny, Derek. We were at our National Speakers Convention here in Canada in December, and I went to a branding workshop because I wanted to learn a little bit more about what is the new way of branding in the modern era. And, you know, I've been branding myself in different ways my entire career. But what was really funny was by the end of this session, we kind of had this great little discussion in this room. And essentially, the guy said to me, Alvin, why pussyfoot around? People remember you for lots of reasons because you're the guy who plays the drums with his feet. And it's a bit of a cheap brand if we're talking about that exercise. But the reality is that's how people connect the dots to Alvin. And in the new era of internet, where we're all looking to attract clients in so many different ways, you sometimes have to be the obvious, even if it's cheesy. So yes, because I started playing the drums when I was 10 years old, it was an alternative to everything else that I couldn't do. Actually, Derek, I wanted to play the piano. That was my first instinct because pianos were everywhere. And we didn't have a lot of money. We certainly didn't have any instruments in our house, especially not a piano. And everybody at my age of 9 years old was taking piano lessons. So I went to take a piano lesson, and the lady wasn't a terrible human being, but she was one of these people that sees the negative before the positive, sees the obstacle before the possibility, saw my feet not being able to play the piano simply because she'd never seen that before. I think that's the other thing, Derek, that I've done in my life is I've almost done everything for the first time ever. This is a very rare thing to use your feet like I do. I was the first person to drive a car with a regular license in the province of Saskatchewan, Canada, without arms in its history. I was the first person to go to public school in our neighborhood, first person to go to college in broadcasting without arms. So when I did things, it never occurred to me that I was doing it as a first. So when I couldn't play piano, that kind of bummed me out because I didn't like losing. I didn't like being defeated. So mom and dad bought me an old set of drums. I put a pair of sticks between my toes and I started playing with my foot, and I've been playing ever since. But I think the key to this story, Derek, real quick, a band director mounted a trombone on the side of a wooden chair with metal rods and clamps to hold it, and I played it with my foot. That was the game changer, not the drums, because I didn't play drums in band. I played drums in my basement. I played trombone in band, and that was an even bigger lesson to learn that I was part of a bigger unit. It wasn't just about Alvin playing with his feet. It was about Alvin playing music to fit in with the band. And again, great exercise in ego.
So are you a naturally talented musician? I couldn't play a note to save my life. And before you answer that, I just want to say to everybody watching and listening, if you've got any questions for Alvin, put them in the chat box down the bottom. So if you go to the black screen at the bottom, move your mouse over that, there's a chat box and Alvin's open to answering any questions. So naturally talented, or did you have to learn that the hard way?
You know, that's a really good question, Derek. I think one of the bigger answers to make it a bigger thing than just about music, I had the very good fortune, because I'm guessing some of your audience is curious, did I ever meet my birth family? And indeed I did in 1993. I didn't do it in the classical sense of wanting to search out, as some would call it with due respect, my real family, because I think it takes more than giving birth to earn the title mom. The mom that raised me was the only mom that I ever knew. But when Darlene and I met, we were getting married in 1993. And the subject came up, should we now take advantage of this time to meet your birth family in case we wanted to invite them? Because hopefully you only get married once. That was a bit of a joke. Anyway, the fact of the matter is, we did not invite them to the wedding, but we did meet the family. And why I mention this is because it was a rare opportunity for somebody to see what their life could have been had they lived in a different environment. What's funny is Darlene, my wife, believes that I am a born musician. I didn't get to meet my birth father because he had passed away in 1982, but he was apparently a remarkable fiddle and violin player. I had music throughout my entire family of my birth family. So I don't know if it was genetics or not. I really don't, Derek, but what I do know is in our home, music was always around. You know, I see sometimes old pictures where we have a radio playing. That was our house. There was always a radio playing. We went to church every Sunday, sang the anthems and hymns. I joined the choir. I loved music. But Derek, I think what it was less about music and more about having an activity to keep me occupied. I couldn't play traditional sports, although I could play football. I mean, that's probably the oldest joke that I own, right? And it's such a bad joke, Derek. I never get the penalty for the handball, right? Ha, 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 ha. But we didn't play football, or as we call it wrongly in North America, soccer. When I was a kid, everybody played ice hockey. Well, I tried that one day, fell on my face, and decided that's not my sport. But music was my thing. And I think that's exactly why I developed, because it was a natural ability, but I also had a natural tendency to want to practice. Because I also learned, this is a big subject, Derek, failure is integral to success. You know, we've stigmatized failure in our society, and whoever did that deserves a smack in the head, because everybody needs to fail to find out how to succeed. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. Now, we're in lockdown here. You're in lockdown in Canada. Some people will be depressed. The people on here won't be, because they've joined the chat show, and I'm sure they're all lifelong learners like us. But if people are low, and we know there are people low all over the world over these issues, and people that have the wrong chemicals going into their brain, can't do anything about that, what message would you have for them, Alvin, at this time, in this critical issue in the history of the world?
Well, first of all, I don't apologize for how this is going to sound. My first instinct during all of this has been, aren't I lucky? I have a roof over my head. I'm married to a beautiful lady who shares my life, but also my business. So we're in the struggle together. When I'm done this call, I'm going to go take my dog down the back alley to the park about two blocks away and play with him for half an hour. My family is intact. My parents are gone, but everyone that I know is healthy. Derek, you live in a state of gratitude when you live without arms, because you never take anything for granted. And that's why it's such a good question, because it's such an awkward answer. I don't want to preach to people, but if you're not feeling gratitude right now, then obviously your struggle is a big one. there are real struggles. I don't want to patronize anybody. People are losing their jobs. People are going bankrupt. Let's not pussyfoot around this. But the fact is, we have to embrace our own existence. You know, I can't help but answer your question by looking behind you, Derek. Why don't we take this time to read? Why don't we take this time to write? Why don't we take this time to create? But let's just say it. Why don't we just take this time to chill? If we can afford to hang out, how many people, let's be honest about this, have said to themselves on a Monday morning, like it is here in Calgary, oh God, another Monday, why can't the weekend last? Well, we're in a perpetual weekend like Groundhog Day now, the movie, right? So if we're gonna have a Groundhog Day movie life, let's make the best of every day in our lives. Groundhog Day is actually kind of a fascinating movie for people to check out. Where it would be found, I don't know, around the world, but it's a comical movie, of course, for those that aren't familiar. It's a Bill Murray in a movie where he wakes up and it's Groundhog Day every day in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, which is a little tiny town in Pennsylvania. It's a comedy, but what I find interesting about taking that movie a little bit apart is it goes all the way from his being amazed to being angry to being depressed to realizing he's got quite a thing here. He wakes up every day with a new day. It's the same day, but he can do more with his day. The point is, make the best of these days. But here's the really key element. If you're not one to be alone, don't be alone. Look what we're doing right here. It may not be the same. I got a video of a family photo from yesterday in Regina, Saskatchewan, of all of my nieces and nephews, their kids, over standing on the lawn in front of my brother John and his wife Kathleen's home. And I do have siblings. My brother John is 87 years old. They can't go out, they can't have people in, but everybody stood on the lawn with Easter signs and, you know, sang a song to Grandma and Grandpa. Just please, this is the most perfect time to make the best of a bad circumstance.
Okay, I've got a question here from Vikram. Were there not other babies at the time of your birth born without arms? Did you get to interact, meet other individuals in your condition?
So there was a different number all across the world. It started in Germany, which had the largest number of confirmed cases in around 8,500. The UK was next in around 6,500 because it very quickly took the drugs as well. But what's fascinating is there was about 20,000 around the globe. There was 125 in Canada. There were very few born with just missing arms. This is the curiosity, Derek, and your audience. The most common form of so-called deformity from the drug was from the toes up. So let's think of it almost like ALS. It attacked the extremities first, which didn't allow them to grow. So the more typical image, not to sound distasteful, would be little flipper hands up by the shoulders or little flipper feet up by the hips. Wow. People mostly lost the use of all four of their limbs to a degree. But I've met thalidomide survivors who were simply missing a couple of fingers or missing a couple of toes. It had everything to do with when it was taken, how many pills were taken, and this is during the first trimester. If it was taken in the second trimester, which was rare because that's not when we get morning sickness, but that was the key. It was actually the argument the drug company used in Germany that they weren't responsible because they said, oh, it's just a coincidence. Well, we knew that it wasn't a coincidence when all the facts came out. It was banned for use on pregnant women in 1963. But believe it or not, it's still around. And I can talk more about that if you like. But the answer to the question is, I didn't meet my first thalidomider, it's a big funny word we've made up, until about 1989. Because you see, when I was adopted, in those days, my records were sealed. So there was no knowledge. Yet, how ironic, I was in hospitals most of my life every summer for a couple or 3 weeks, maybe more, to learn to use artificial arms. I found out later that I actually did interact with several thalidomiders during that time, but none of us were allowed to talk about it because of the secrecy of the drug. But I did become part of the founding committee to put together our first support group in Canada called TVAC, Thalidomide Victims Association of Canada. And I know there's support groups now all over the world. So adults of thalidomide are now meeting more commonly, but here's one key element to it. It's like humanity. And some people are really good with it. Some people are really mad about it. But what I've learned is I didn't need to support from them because I never thought of myself that way. That sounded a little bit high and mighty of me, Derek, but I think the key to this was I never thought like a handicapped person. So being around other handicapped people is actually my most awkward moment. How hypocritical and ironic, isn't it?
Yeah, that really is. I think the real thing is what you're saying there is it's how we think, isn't it? How we think. If we think positive, we attract positive people. If we think negative, we, and that's what Gabby was saying last week on our neurolinguistic seminar. I see Patricia Fripps joined us from San Francisco. Welcome, Patricia.
Oh my God.
Thanks for coming in. I did tell Alvin that you might be on the line. Before I finish, Alvin, I want to ask you one question. I know you do a lot of fantastic work with schools, awakening children's awareness to diversity, etc. You've got 2 minutes left. Tell us what you do in a school for the children.
I want young people to remember that self-esteem doesn't come from the corner store. We can't order it from Amazon. It doesn't get delivered to our front door, not even now. Self-esteem comes from struggle. It comes from challenge. But here's the key. When you're young, who you are is not defined by what you see in a mirror. Some people are blessed with really good looks like you, Derek. Some people are mutts like me. And the bottom line is that our image on our outside of us is too defined in our society by this bizarre thing about body perfect. I want kids of all ages and colors and religions and languages to understand we're all, and we're, boy, finding it out now, Derek, we're all children of planet Earth. That sounds really woo-woo and idealistic, but I don't apologize for that either. We're now finding that it doesn't matter what color you are, where you live in this world, we're all in this together. And I've been sending that message to kids for 35 years, Derek, so it's not new to me. And I use my body style and my story to remind them that we've all got something, Derek. We've all got something we need to overcome. But boy, when we overcome it and we reach the next level of success, there's nothing more prideful than doing something ourselves, becoming successful, and not having someone do it for us. So I remind them of all of that. But also, I remind them that we only get one life, and what we do with it is everything.
That's absolutely fantastic. I'm going to open the unmute for a couple of questions in case we've got any. But I just wanted to say, I was just looking at your YouTube channel just now and I wanted to congratulate you on it. And if there is anyone that wants to see Alvin in action, just go to Alvin Law's YouTube channel and just take a look at it, because you will see some absolutely amazing things. And Alvin's been kind enough to come over and speak at the Professional Speaking Association's over here, and we have to get some drums for him, we have to get a piano so he can play it, and he just gets a standing ovation. And actually, the only other person that's got a standing ovation in England, because we're not very good at giving standing ovations, is Patricia Fripp, and she's on this call as well. So I'm really honoured to have people that have had standing ovations. In fact, there was an American speaker over last year at the conference, and they didn't get a standing ovation, and you should have seen the look on their face. And they were brilliant as well. I have to say they were brilliant, but there we are. So I'm going to unmute everybody. Everybody's unmuted now. So if there's a question or two, please fire them away, and then we'll wrap up.
Well, may I ask a question then? I will jump in before Will gets to us. Alvin, wonderful to see you. And yes, I remember the last time was in Las Vegas at the airport, baggage claim. Good. How are you finding the activity for speakers in Canada? I assume everything has frozen. Are you being invited on a lot of podcasts and webinars to keep as busy as you should be?
Well, first of all, I want to tell everybody, just seeing your face is making me blush. In this industry, and Patricia, you know this is true, I am so blessed to be able to call you a bit of a friend. But when you were in the front row of my audience in London when I spoke to PSA, I was practically frozen with fear, because the respect I have for you is so huge. So to see your face right now is very flattering to me. And to answer your question, I think this is a great lesson for speakers right now, because how ironic. the joke in my home is we don't get paid to talk in my kitchen. So how do we do that? What I'm finding is this is really a good test. I don't believe this is going to last forever. I believe the model will be with schools, because schools will eventually have to go back. We're not going to close all of our schools across the planet for the rest of eternity. So we will have to learn new coping techniques. The schools will lead the way to public gatherings. The public gatherings will lead the way. Here was another one I learned, that hotels are not going to shutter. Convention centers aren't going to close. But see, I'm an eternal optimist. So I think we're actually going to be back to a relatively healthy speaking market by the fall. I think by early 2021, I've already been rebooked. I had 11 cancellations and 5 rebooked for 2021. I think a lot of people are going to a knee-jerk reaction right now, changing their speech, changing their platform, going to online. I don't have a problem with that. The only trouble is, I'm the guy, and you know this, Patricia, and everybody listening, if you've seen me, I'm like a show. I'm not like a speech. I'm like an entertainment package that does include the drum and piano. And yes, I can do a speech without them. But more than anything, I believe we have to gather, because human beings need to be together. This is lovely to see your face, to see everyone online, but you can't hug online. We're going to learn how to do different hugs. You can't be next to somebody in an emotional moment where they can give you a tissue because you're having a cry. We need to be together, because human beings were not meant to be virtual. So all I'm asking people to do is, while we're on a little hiatus, do some more writing, do some more, you know, speech development. But more than anything, don't lose the faith. This will turn around. And I believe it will sooner than we think.
Fantastic. Thanks, Patricia. Thanks, Alvin. We're out of time now, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to stop the recording in a minute, but I'm just going to tell you about the people I've got on the show this week. On Wednesday, I've got the fantastic Jeff Ram. Jeff Ram spoke at the NSA convention in America. Hardly any UK speakers ever get on the main platform, and Jeff got a standing ovation. And
don't miss him.
Some of the people in the audience thought he was fantastic. Well, everyone thought he was fantastic. Jeff's latest book, Celebrity Service, I have here. He's a fantastic friend of mine. Unfortunately, he supports Sunderland Football Club. No one, the people in the UK will know what that means, but it doesn't matter. He's known as a Macan. That's in the northeast of London. He's a fantastic guy. So that's Wednesday lunchtime, UK time. I just wanted to thank everybody for coming and joining us today, and also to thank Alvin for giving us his time, getting up early in the morning, showing his feet, and that's a handshake between the toes between you and I. We're going to stay on the line. Alvin's going to stay on the line for any off the record conversations for as long as anybody wants to have a chat. So I look forward to seeing you next Wednesday, and thanks for joining Derek's live radio web show.